Good to see you, everyone. I know we are, like was said, fewer numbers today, but God is still pleased with our presence before Him on this holy day, which it is, the Sabbath day, here in the middle of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It is sort of an interesting year, as was mentioned. You know, this is the Sabbath. The morrow after the Sabbath, Sunday, during the Days of Unleavened Bread, begins the count. The Pentecost. By the way, I should mention that, and I recommend this because it is a very interesting thing to do. You know, the Bible actually tells us to count 50 days, or you know, count these days, and then count 7 Sabbaths. And we actually do that literally on our calendar. We put, you know, tomorrow would be day number one, and then we keep writing. You know, we're doing a count, and you know, and as we count it, you know, we sort of give, you know, an acknowledgement to God that we're counting these days, looking forward to the next festival. And it's kind of neat because when you do that, it really sort of stretches out even the meaning of these days that we're in right now, through the whole spring season into the late spring season, thinking about that harvest, that early harvest, which happened during that 7-week period. You know, because today, without the harvest, we don't have the harvest. We just sort of, you know, phase out. We do these days, and then it's like all of a sudden Pentecost is a surprise at the end. Where as for the Israelites, I mean, this was a season. You know, they were involved in a harvest during that season, and it just sort of helps us to remember that. I think anyway. So to me, it's a very interesting exercise to put the day, you know, write the day actually up on your calendar or something, so you'll know where you are in that count. So it's kind of a neat experience. But anyway, and then of course during the days we have, or here at the beginning, you know, you had the wave sheaf presented on the Sunday, which we don't do that anymore without the harvest either. But that looked forward, of course, to the presentation of Jesus Christ. We know that He was resurrected at the end of the Sabbath and came out of the tomb, and then. And I would assume He came out of the tomb. You know, He's in the tomb 3 days and 3 nights, so I always try to square this exactly. He died at three, but He was put in the grave right before sunset. So I don't know, was He alive then a few hours before He came out of the grave? If you line up these 72 hours exactly, you see what I'm saying? But in any case, he was alive then on that day. That Sunday, he was alive to be presented as the wave sheaf offering. He went up to heaven. He met, you know, he saw his disciples later. He went up to the Father and presented himself and came back down. And he was the wave sheaf, the first of the first fruits, is what Jesus Christ was in fulfilling that. It's also interesting. This year is one of those years where Easter, which is supposed to celebrate the resurrection, actually comes on this day. Of the first fruits. So you know, it's not Easter. We know that. The day of the first fruits is not Easter. That's a pagan celebration. But it is good to remember, brethren. You know, we do observe the Passover when we commemorate the death of Jesus Christ. But then we have a festival of 7 days, and it's good to remember that it was during that Feast of Unleavened Bread that Jesus Christ came out of the grave. He was actually alive for the first 3 days of that fest, or excuse me, he was dead for the first 3 days of that festival, and then he was alive for the rest of it. He came out of his grave during that festival. So I do believe there's a tie in there, but it's not the way that the world sees, you know, with its all its pagan symbolism that it's put around the Easter holiday. It's a travesty what Satan has done with this holiday. But anyway, brethren, that's not actually what I wanted to talk about today. That's just better get moving here. But thankfully, Mr. Dobson's going to stay and visit with us for a few minutes, so for a little bit anyway. But I do want to again say happy feast, because we do have a few more days to say that. And I hope that this feast has so far been a time of renewal, because that's what it's intended to be. And that's actually what I want to talk about this afternoon, brethren. Here in the middle of the feast, I want us to consider how this festival pictures a real break with the past and making a fresh start. A break with the past and making a fresh start. And of course, this is meant to carry on beyond the feast itself. as you know, when we return to normal life, we'll be eating leavening again. But nevertheless, the lessons of these days is to carry forward. That's what it's all about, making a break with the past, making a fresh start. I'd like you to turn over to Exodus 12, where this festival was introduced to the Israelites. Exodus chapter 12, of course, Passover was introduced there as well. And then, do you remember which cup here was yours? Was it either one? Anyway, the in Exodus 12, we are given some instructions, well, about the Passover first and then the Days of Unleavened Bread. I want to point something else out about the Passover first and note what it says here. It says about the Passover that in verse 8, that you shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. So unleavened bread was to be part of the Passover observance. And then, if you skip down to verse 11, it says, thus you shall eat it with a, this is the Passover, with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand, so you shall eat in it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. Now, what's interesting about this is, in later years, of course, the Jews believe they don't have to be in haste. The fact that they made much of the idea of reclining at the Passover as to say, we're now free people, relaxed, we're not in haste in that sense anymore. Actually, I think they just got the reclining from basically Roman, Greco-Roman banquets. That's the way they eat. So, I mean, I think that's why where the Jews came up with reclining at the Passover. Not that this was necessarily a requirement for later years, that they would have to have the staff in the hand and the sandals on their feet, you know, ready to go. But clearly, at that time in Egypt, they had to be ready to go. That's what this is showing. They needed to be ready to move. Now, one thing about that is some people use this, by the way, to argue for a 15th Passover, because they'll say what happened is they ate the Passover and they left the same night as they left the 8th Passover. They waited till after midnight and early morning before it was dawn. That's when they left. And here's the proof, because they had to be staff in hand, sandals on their feet, you know, belt on their waist, ready to go out the door. And what we explain, actually, you know, how we've said this is on the 14th is when the death angel passed over that night. And then, you know, the next morning they had to have the meat eaten, whatever was not eaten had to be burned in the morning. And then you had that whole next daylight period before they left Egypt the following night, which we refer to as the night to be much observed. I firmly believe that is correct, what we teach. What we teach makes the most sense here. But then the issue is, why, if that's true, if they weren't going to leave Egypt till the next night, then why at the Passover were they staff in hand, belt on the feet, you know, belt around the waist and all this? Well, it's because they still need to be ready to go in the morning, because they were scattered around the land of Goshen, and they left from Ramesses at the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that at the beginning of the 15th. But they weren't all there yet. You see what I'm saying? That daylight period was a day of, they had to get all their flocks and all their kids and all their belongings that they were going to take and load them up, and they had to get them to the place where they were going to gather to depart from. That whole thing was a gigantic process. In fact, it's kind of miraculous that that was able to happen in one day, that they got to Ramesses, and as we're told, they actually got themselves organized into armies, into ranks by their tribes and so forth. So that was a major process for them to do that, and it happened all in that one day. But clearly, they needed to be ready as soon as it was morning. They needed to be out of that house with all getting their stuff and gone. So it was about leaving quickly. And the reason I'm mentioning that is in context of the Passover, because it also relates then to the Days of Unleavened Bread. There was a big element of haste in what they were doing. Let's continue here down in Exodus 12, and we'll see in verses 17 and 18. He says, so you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Now, by the way, I want to make a point about this. When was he given this instruction? Well, he was, remember, back in the beginning of the chapter, it said in verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, 'This month shall be your beginning of months.'" So you're going to start counting that month as number 1. But clearly, verse 3 tells us the latest that this instruction could have been given. Because it says, "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, 'On the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb.'" So it was on the 10th day of the first month that they took that lamb. Obviously, Moses gave this instruction before that. So it was before the 10th. So actually, you had several days leading up between these instructions here and the Passover and then the days of unleavened bread. There were several days of advance that they had some warning about that. But that's why something here seems a little strange. I want to point out it, and then we got to think about why this is. So it says 7 days, verse 17, "You shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on the same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt." So he's telling them this is going to happen. "Therefore, you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread." And so that's the end of the day here. "Unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening for 7 days." No, okay, he's talking about no leaven, but I'll get to that in a second. First of all, he's telling them you need to eat unleavened bread for 7 days. And then if you skip down to verse 33, it says, and this is when they're actually leaving during the Exodus. It says, "And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste." So it wasn't only the Israelites that were leaving in haste. The Egyptians wanted them gone in haste. "Get out of here. You're just destroying us. For they said, 'We shall all be dead.' So the people took their dough." Notice this. "So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders." They had all this stuff wrapped, their belongings wrapped up in their clothes, and so their kneading bowls are all wrapped up. They're hauling this stuff out. And so the people took their dough before it was leavened. And skip down to verse 37. "Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses," that's the gathering point was Ramesses, "they left from there to Succoth," that's the next place, "about 600,000 men on foot besides children." So probably a couple million people, 2 or 3 million maybe. "A mixed multitude went up with them also, in flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock." And notice verse 39. "And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves." And then I hold your place here. I want you to look over in Deuteronomy 16, see something else about this. Deuteronomy 16, we'll come back here to Exodus 12 in just a second. But in Deuteronomy 16, it mentions the Passover in verse 2. And then in verse 3 it says, "You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it. That is, the bread of affliction. For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste." The bread of affliction, "for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life." And the next verse tells us, "No leaven shall be seen among you in all your territory for 7 days." And we can go back now, back to chapter 12, because we'll see that in a few other places as well. No leaven was to be seen. So there was an issue of unleavened bread. But we'll see in a minute here, I'll point this out in a minute, but you know that it's not just a matter of you're going to make unleavened bread. They were also to have no leaven bread, no leavening. Verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses, For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day till the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. It's very serious. In verses 19 through 20, for 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or native of the land. And then in verse 20, you shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. And by the way, in these verses, there's two words here for unleavened, or for leaven. This is confusing sometimes. You see the word, one word is hametz. Sometimes it's spelled with a CH, sometimes just a H, but hametz is the word for leaven. And then another word that's used here is seor. You might see that written as S-E apostrophe O-R, seor. And unfortunately, our Bible does this, you know, the English Bibles do this a lot. I mean, you'll see two different words, but they're translated the same word, leaven. They're actually slightly different, but essentially, and I think it's fair that they could be translated the same because they are going to consequently be about the same thing. Seor is the actual leavening agent, whereas hametz is a leavened product. That's the difference. Seor is yeast, basically, for them. It was the yeast, or it could even be looked at as the inedible dough that was with the leavening, with the yeast in it, that was used to leaven the next batch of dough. Whereas hametz is an edible product. It's something you eat, basically. It's bread, like bread, leavened bread. So that is the difference between those two terms. But you see them, they're both here in the Hebrew. And I'll point that out specifically in another verse. I didn't write down which words were which here. You could do a word study on your own, but I'll point it out in another verse. But now we see all this, and here is the interesting issue. I've got a few things I want to read to you today because I think they are very instructive. This is from an Orthodox rabbi, and they're talking about this, and it says, they value. Some people struggle to understand this commandment. They value the idea of eating matzah. And by the way, matzah is the word that's used actually here in the Bible for unleavened bread, matzah. Not the matzo cracker, but it's a matzah. And in fact, the actual phrase in Leviticus, where it's called the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that's actually Hag HaMatzah, or Hag HaMatzot, actually, of unleavens, Feast of the Unleavens, it's plural. So matzah, it says, they value the idea of eating that in order to help us relive the momentous event that gave rise to our nation. But they grapple with the law that all chametz must be removed from the house. All leavening must be removed from the house. Why couldn't the Torah simply allow people to eat matzah even while there is chametz in the house? Why is it necessary to clean every nook and cranny in the house to remove all traces of chametz before the Passover begins? What is the deeper meaning behind this commandment? It's an interesting question, and of course we have a lot of insight into what the answer is. They do too, actually. I'll point this out. But here is a bizarre thing that I want to point out again here in Exodus. Because remember, it said that the reason, let's look at this again in Exodus 12, it said that the reason that that they did this, verse 39, and they baked unleavened cakes of the dough for which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. Now, it just seems odd when you read that it says that's the reason, because actually the reason it would seem to be more is because God told them they could only make unleavened bread, could only eat unleavened bread, and they better not have any leavening at all. But this just says, because they couldn't wait. And a lot of times, this is why this is such an odd thing. Sometimes the people say, well, wait a minute. So the symbolism of the unleavened bread is simply because you can't wait. It's the bread of haste. You have to get out quickly, no time to make leavened bread. It's just that they had no time to make leavened bread. Clearly, that's not the only reason. If that was the if that was the only reason, then there would be no reason to get rid of leavening. There would be no reason to get rid of the leavening. If the only reason you were eating unleavened bread is because you couldn't wait for it to rise. So that is an interesting way to look at this. And now I think that they figured this out too. The Jewish people have figured this out later in their writings and so forth. But, and that's even without the New Testament explaining it, which it does. But here is some interesting fact about this. I was trying to give this a little bit of thought. I periodically look at this and I kind of wonder what was God saying here in saying it this way. And I think, look, the people did not really understand the symbolism here yet. God did. But let's think about this for just a moment. If God says, I want you to make unleavened bread. Now let's think about the people in that society. The people in that society, unleavened bread meant a quick meal. That's what it meant. It meant you don't wait around. You don't have time in advance. You just make it on the fly. It's a very quick thing. If you get guests come over immediately, and you want to serve them some bread, and you get the flour, you get it ready, and you put it in the oven and let it bake really fast. You don't have time to wait for it to rise. They understand that means fast. It means quick. And so I think that when God told them to make unleavened bread for the Passover and then even for the days of unleavened bread, the way they would have understood that just from the very statement was, because here where he says they did this because there wasn't time, and earlier he hadn't mentioned that there wasn't time, but they would have, that's what they would have concluded. You see what I'm saying? In other words, if he had told them, okay, you need to make unleavened bread, their immediately thought would be, there's no time. We have to go. There's no time. That's what he's telling us. And in fact, that is part of what he was telling. That was part of what it was about. So they would have gotten that point just from the very fact of him being told to make unleavened bread. Now, what about the issue of you can't have leavened bread at all? Well, again, they might have thought that was sort of an extreme way of saying, you know, of God saying, you're going to make unleavened bread because we're in a hurry. I don't even want to see any leavening at all. So don't even think about it, kind of a thing. And they would have been, that's probably the way they were looking at that at the time. That no, we're not even going to think about making leavened bread. We are on the run. We have to go fast. We have to get out of here. That is what this is about. And indeed, that is what it's about. But it's more than that again. Because, again, it's not an issue that they were just not allowed to make any new leavened bread. They weren't allowed to have old leavened bread that was already made. And what did I point out a minute ago? That these instructions were given several days in advance. They were given before the 10th day. So you'd think, well, that would have been enough time. And it says they hadn't made provision, but you think that would have been enough time to have some bread ready to go. Possibly that's true, that they would have had enough time. I'm not sure exactly how their allotments of bread went. You know, did they go out each day to grind bread for that day? That might have been a big project to grind it for a number of days in advance. I'm not sure I don't know that we have enough information about that, but nevertheless, it does seem that they could have, because it explicitly states they had not made provisions, so they seemingly could have. But I think they were being shown that this was not about them making provisions. They were being rescued. They were being delivered, and they'd better be ready to go right at that moment. And that's kind of what they needed to see in doing that. They needed to make a break, make a fast break, and get out. But of course, there's a lot more to the issues of this. And one other thing that, of course, shows that there's much more to it is over in Leviticus 2, and I'd like you to turn over there. In Leviticus 2, and chapter 11, I'm sorry, verse 11 of Leviticus 2, it says, "No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven." Actually, that's chametz there. "For you shall burn no leaven," that's seor. See, here's a case where it's two different words translated the same. No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with chametz or leaven, a leaven product. "For you shall burn no seor, nor any honey in any offering to the Lord made by fire." Now, this clearly shows that the proscription against leavening has more to do, it has much more to do than just this issue of there's not enough time to let the bread rise. Because here we're talking about just regular grain offerings that were offered, you know, every day, in fact, and you know, in the land of Israel. This was just an ongoing process. So, you know, obviously, this isn't just a matter of they didn't have time. There's something more about it. There's something more to the symbolism of the leavening. Now, think about this. The Israelites, they didn't have the full truth about, you know, God's plan and Christ and what we understand about the process of coming out of sin and all of that. But they did have some clue about these things. Certainly their leaders who were converted, there were a few converted leaders back in the Old Testament, would have understood some of these keys. But just from these simple facts that we have here, the people discerned that there was more to the issue of the leavening. That why was the leavening forbidden? Why were they not allowed to even have the old bread when they left Egypt? Why were they not allowed to make offerings, grain offerings, with leavening? Why was that forbidden? By the way, I want to mention something about leavening and in the perspective of the Jewish people today. We have to be careful because when we go to the store and buy a product, it may even say kosher for Passover and we think it's unleavened, and yet it may have baking soda in it. Because to the Jews, baking soda is not this word. It's not seor. Seor is yeast or dough with the like I said, the inedible dough with the yeast. That is exclusively to them is what leavening is. It is not. But whereas we understand, you know, it's more than that because there's chemical leavenings as well, which is what baking soda is. We would say that's also leavening. But they do work quite differently, and I want to mention that here as we go through this, because I think this is also very instructive about what we're talking about here. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 5, because, of course, we have this statement in the New Testament. And Paul gave some understanding here that was certainly new. But actually, the general concept about leaven was already understood. This was not new. This was known by the Israelites. This was known by the Jewish people of that day. When he said in chapter 5 and verse 6, he was talking to the Corinthians, and they were allowing this sin amidst them. He says, "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" And we'll talk about that more in a second. Therefore, and of course they did know that. That's how it worked with leavening. "Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly or literally are unleavened." It was the days of unleavened bread. "For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." So that's the, obviously, we understand that's the real symbolism here that is involved. But there's some interesting facts that I want to bring out about this that I think are very interesting in this light. First of all, matzah refers to a special type of flatbread. In order to be Passover matzah, the bread dough must, and this is among the Jews, must be baked less than 18 minutes after the flour is moistened with water. If the dough is not baked within 18 minutes, and by the way, 18 I think is, that's a sort of probably a mystical Kabbalistic number. I mean, that's where they get this whole thing of you cease everything 18 minutes before sunset and this kind of thing too. Nevertheless, it does need to be a very brief time, in fact. I mean, they picked 18, I'm sure, for this symbolic reason. But there is a point to this, because if it's not baked within a very short time, let's put it that way, of being moistened, it begins to ferment from the naturally occurring leavening agents in the atmosphere. Now, that is a remarkable thing when you think about it. In ancient times, there were only two ways, this explains, to make leavened bread dough. One way was to mix the flour with water and let it stand until it began to ferment naturally. So it would rise on its own. If you just leave it there, it would rise. More typically, a small batch of already leavened starter dough left over from the previous day's batch was tossed in with the flour and water. The old culture of leaven in the starter dough quickly spread through the new batch of dough. As the saying goes, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. By the way, that is different from the way a chemical leavening like baking soda works. Baking soda doesn't do that. This is the fermenting process of yeast. That's why there is a bit of a difference here. They both have the sense of they puff up. They produce all of this hot air and there's no substance. And Paul mentions being puffed up as well. And they do that. Both things do that. But the leavening in particular has this spreading corruption. The yeast has this spreading corruption element, which is not the same as in the chemical leavening agents. But that's a key here. So it says, by means of this method with the starter dough, a single culture of leaven was passed on from loaf to loaf to loaf, day by day. This is how sourdough bread is still made today. Now that's interesting. So they had this dough, this inedible part, but it was the part that they kept putting it in the new batch. And when they make the new leavening, that would go again to the new one. And notice that it's this same old leaven. It's the same thing. It keeps there. It's all the time it's there. And I thought this was interesting that was pointed out here. What was Paul saying? Therefore, purge out the old leaven. He's not just talking about the crumbs of your house. This was a picture of the starter dough. We're talking about this dough that was used to keep the rising of the next loaf and the next. He says, get rid of that. The old starter dough leaven represents our old way of life. It is sin, godlessness, bad company, bad habits, all the things that taint our lives. Like an old culture of leaven starter dough, those things continue to leaven our lives from day to day, conforming us to our past. Paul urges us to make a clean break with the old culture and to start over as a new batch, like unleavened bread. When the children of Israel left Egypt, they were leaving behind their old culture. While in Egypt, they'd absorbed much of the wickedness and idolatry of the society, and the unleavened bread symbolized a new beginning. They were starting over. They needed to get rid of that starter dough. They're not going to be having that anymore. It's out. And, of course, in symbol, they were to get rid of all the leavened products and all of the leavening period. But, of course, you can't get rid of all of it because it's also in the air. It's everywhere, brethren. It's impossible for us to truly get rid of all the leavening. And I think that's an interesting fact, too. I want to mention something about this. By the way, before I forget this, I didn't mean to mention that in a Jewish matzah factory, by the way, the moment a bit of dough gets to the stage where it might begin to leaven, it's immediately scrubbed away. In a matzah factory, every 18 minutes, the entire production line is meticulously cleaned. That was fascinating to me. So that's what they're doing there. What they understood, what the Jews came to believe, is that it represented what they referred to as the Yetzer Ra, that is the inclination evil, the bad inclination, that in human beings, in the human heart, there is an evil inclination. That's what that pushes us to evil. And I also believe in a good inclination in the sense of your conscience, I guess. But they believe in this, that in human beings there is this impulse driving to evil. In fact, this was interesting to me. There's a prayer. This is the Ma'anash Lashon. This is a prayer said at the graves of the righteous. And you'll see the point here. It says, "Grant our hearts the desire to turn to you in complete repentance, so that we will not be put to shame before our ancestors in the world to come. And so may it be your will, Lord our God and Lord of our ancestors, to destroy and to remove the yoke of the evil inclination, the Yetzer Ra, from our hearts. For you, or Yetzer Hara, sometimes it's written as, for you have created us to fulfill your will, and we are obligated to fulfill your will. You desire this. We desire this. What prevents this from happening? The yeast in the dough." That's what they understand. The yeast in the dough. "It is revealed and known before you that we do not have the strength to withstand it. Instead, may it be your will, Lord our God and Lord of our ancestors, to remove it from us and subdue it, so that we shall wholeheartedly make your will our will." I mean, that is a remarkable statement that they have stated. I mean, it shows exactly the truth that what we're talking about here is this evil impulse in human beings, that we have the carnal mind is enmity against God, is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. That is the yeast in the dough, and that has to be purged. And there's just a number of things that show that. I'm gonna wrap this up real quickly, though, with something else that I thought was interesting. If you think about this, they're acknowledging you can't get rid of all the leavening. You know, as mentioned, you find it in stuff, you look around, there it is. It's in the nooks and crannies, it's everywhere. You can't get into all the nooks and crannies, all the crevices in your house. But worse than that, it's in the air. You can't get it out of the air. What are you going to do? I mean, you can get some filters, but you're not going to succeed in this. It's all around. And this was an interesting statement to me. When they go through the process of getting the leavening out of their houses, they actually make a declaration. It's called the nullification. And here's what they say, and I think it's, you know, not that we need to say it, but it's an instructive point. It says, so after they've concluded the search for the leavening, gathered it all up, and they actually take it out to be burned, what's left of it. And here's the declaration. It says, "All hametz, or all leaven and leavened bread that is in my possession, which I have not seen, removed, or is unknown to me, shall be annulled and considered ownerless like the dust of the earth." So, I mean, that helps, right? In other words, it's the sense of they're just saying, look, we did what we could. This is kind of what that really means. We went and tried to do everything we could. So we've declared this nullification. Now, obviously, they can't really declare that nullification, can they? Because the sin that they can't get out, they can't themselves nullify. But there's one who has nullified it, and that's the only nullification that we can have. And thankfully, we have it. They actually don't have it. Even though they declare it for themselves, they don't really have it. And that's so remarkable when we think about that in context. Well, anyway, brethren, I just wanted to, you know, bring a few of these observations to you. I think it's truly remarkable that they do have insight on this. In fact, they have insight into the pride too. I'll probably share this with you later. I don't want to continue more here, but they do make a point about the fact that the only difference between leaven and unleavened bread is hot air, and that the one is puffed up and it looks imposing, but it's really, it doesn't have real substance. So, brethren, as we partake of the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth, as we put out the leaven of malice and wickedness, the old starter dough, let's begin again. Let's have a fresh start. Let's make a clean break with our past and move forward to God's kingdom and His way of life.